Below are a few questions to help you understand your starting point. It may be wise to revisit these questions a few times so that a moment of inspiration or negativity doesn't bias your answers. What's your track record in accomplishing your goals? How skilled are you at setting goals that are attainable? What are your current strengths and weaknesses? In the past, have you tended to over or underestimate your strengths and weaknesses? What are the things that you have been most passionate about in poker? Do they still inspire you? Do you tend to over or underestimate the time it will take to achieve your goals? How accurate have you been in determining your potential? What has previously caused you to fail? What conflicting goals have caused problems for you in the past? Ideally, your starting point includes all of your previous accomplishments and failures. As discussed previously, dissatisfaction can drive players to want to start a new goal fresh and do things like delete their hold'em manager database to mask previous failure. You cannot wish away previous failure. If you did, you'd be ignoring all that you could possibly learn from those failures and wasting their potential to facilitate future success. If you truly could start from scratch, you would just have to fail again in order to relearn everything that was deleted from your memory. One of the great things about poker is the sheer variety of possible achievements. You could aim to become a great player, make a lot of money, win bracelets or major titles, and you can do so in a multitude of games, stakes, and formats. The key is to narrow it to a few things you really want. With so many options available, it's easy to be pulled in too many directions to actually accomplish anything. Why you want it. In the process of setting goals, it's important not just to know what you want to achieve, but why you want to achieve it. This can help you to determine the benefits of success and the consequences of failure. Clarify and make your goals stronger. You may realize that the benefits of a particular goal are not as strong as you originally thought, and you need to reconsider and maybe even revise it. Avoid distractions, laziness, and quitting when you encounter a difficult situation. The most common reason why players want to achieve their goals in poker is, of course, money. But even when money is the number one goal, there's always something beyond cash to gain from being successful in poker. Being your own boss, proving your parents wrong, feeling like a big winner, or just having a really cool job. Understanding these often unconscious motives helps you to recognize what else is at stake and can also provide direction for your goals. If you realize that the reason you play poker is because you are ultra-competitive, set goals and a plan that corresponds to that reason, such as regularly taking shots against tough players. If the biggest reward you get from poker is having a cool job, set goals to play live events in interesting places. If poker gives you the opportunity to spend more time with your family, you might decide to play more tables online so you can get the same volume in less time. Aligning your goals with the reasons you want to achieve them will help you to get more out of the game and may even increase your overall happiness and life EV. Barry's take. What drives you? In his best-selling book, Drive, author Daniel Pink draws on a large body of research to highlight that our preconceptions about what motivates us is flawed. Money, of course, is a big motivator, but only to a small degree. Once someone is earning an amount of money that they can live comfortably on, the lure of money shows diminishing returns. Beyond money, these are the three traits Pink identifies that really motivates people to achieve goals in their working lives. Autonomy, a feeling of being in control of one's work, to not be constrained by it or a boss. Mastery, a sense of reaching the top of your craft to be the best at what you do. Purpose, the sense that your work means something and that you've contributed to society in some way. After reading Drive, I naturally thought about how well these three traits fit with the life of a professional poker player. Autonomy makes perfect sense. The sense of freedom in poker and making your own hours is one of the biggest appeals of the game. Mastery also fits. Even though there's a popular belief that poker is all about finding the weakest games, the players that tend to do the best in the long term are the ones who maintain enthusiasm for improving and challenging themselves. Purpose is the difficult one. Poker is viewed as a selfish and unproductive job, not only by society, but often by the players themselves, because success comes at someone else's expense. When you look at purpose in the context of motivation, it makes a lot of sense why some players get disillusioned with the game after a while. It doesn't have to be this way, however. Poker can fulfill the personal goals you have for yourself, teach you skills that transfer to other aspects of life, and be something that you love to do. You may not be motivated to make $100,000 in a year without knowing how the money could help your family. You may not be driven to beat 3-6, but devoting time to coaching other players keeps you motivated to improve your game. Think about what poker means to you, and find a deeper sense of purpose. Phil Hellmuth isn't always the first role model I would point out, but his dogged determination to win more bracelets than anyone else gives him a strong sense of purpose. For that reason, he's worth emulating. Planning for obstacles. When you first set a goal, you're often full of optimism and energy. Dreaming of what you can accomplish feels good, and you're excited about the road ahead. The problem is that most players don't consider the obstacles that might stand in the way of their dreams. They imagine the end result without thinking about the day-to-day work required to get there. Consequently, they're unprepared when setbacks inevitably emerge, and so they overreact by becoming frustrated, anxious, or hopeless. This is a big reason why New Year's resolutions fail. People imagine what they want, but they don't develop long-lasting plans that incorporate all of the potential hardships they might face. The solution to this problem is to anticipate setbacks and obstacles, and to appropriately plan for them. Do your due diligence ahead of time by imagining every possible setback, and then make a plan for how to overcome the ones that are most likely. If you are trying to move up in stakes, make a plan for how you'll deal with a downswing, tough regulars, or a big losing day. Not only will this help you to face the problems you plan for, but you'll also be training and practicing your problem-solving skills so that when unexpected problems arise, you are more skilled at reacting to them. Here are two additional strategies that will help you to break through any obstacle. 1. Learn your goals. When problems arise, especially unforeseen ones, they often cause stress and negativity. That combination can disconnect you from your goals and your reasons for wanting to achieve them, which ultimately can lead you to feel depressed or unmotivated. This negativity then impedes your ability to overcome the problem and get back on track. To prevent this downward spiral, find ways to reinforce and learn your goals. Write them down and review them regularly, especially at times of heightened stress. The clearer and more solidified your goals are in your mind, the less likely that it is that problems you encounter will have a negative impact. 2. Plan inspiration. Continuing to make progress during tough times is more challenging when you're lacking sufficient energy. Players often intuitively go looking for sources of inspiration to give them a much-needed mental boost. However, this process is often random and wastes valuable time. Instead, when you're setting goals, put together a collection of things that you find inspiring. For example, a movie clip, song, picture, memento from a family member, or famous quote. When trouble strikes, you'll be able to utilize them right away to give you the jolt of energy you need to keep fighting. Examples of well-structured goals. Here are 3 fictional examples of how to put the advice in this chapter into practice. Bob is a 27-year-old professional poker player who plays 1-2 no limit, takes occasional shots at 2-4 and 5-10, and plays an average of 40,000 hands a month online. Results goal, make $100,000 in a year, including rakeback. Process goals, over the first 3 months, steadily increase from 40,000 to 80,000 hands per month. Work with my coach on how to exploit the regulars at 2-4 so I can establish myself at that level. Commit to 1 coaching session per week and study an additional 4 hours per week on my own. Eliminate my biggest C-game error, playing too passively out of position. Use the mental hand history to work on both the tactical and mental game side of it. Why do you want to make $100,000 in a year? For poker to make sense as a profession, I need to make much more than I was making in my last full-time job. Plus, I feel like I need to prove to myself and to my family that choosing to play poker professionally was the right decision. What obstacles might stand in your way? How will you deal with them? I could go on a big downswing when taking shots, which would be pretty damaging, especially at 5-10. I'll deal with this by setting a fixed number of buy-ins to use each time I take shots. At 5-10, I'll only play when the games are incredibly good. I could also get demotivated if I'm not making money for several months, or I'm not able to increase my hands played per month fast enough. I'll deal with these issues by adding a 4th process goal to consistently work hard on my mental game. This has never been a big problem, but I've never attempted something this big in poker before. Losing motivation could be the thing that destroys my goal, so I'll take extra precaution from the start to make sure I minimize the potential for harm. Jane is a serious amateur online player who plays single-table tournaments online. On average, she plays 2 hours a night and 4 tables at a time. She knows that if she wants to make more money from sit-and-goes, she needs to increase her volume. Results goal. Increase volume from 4 tables to 6 tables while maintaining current ROI. Process goals. Start by adding one additional table in the first hour of play and steadily increase the length of time I can maintain it. Only add one more table when 5 tables feels as comfortable as playing on 4 does now. Master bubble calling ranges to the level of unconscious competence so I can make crucial decisions quickly. Review hands in S&G Wiz at the end of every session. Develop a consistent warm-up routine that gets me motivated to play at a high level and allows me to build mental endurance. Why is increasing volume so important? I enjoy challenging myself and love the feeling of working hard and seeing the reward. Having more money is never a bad thing either. What obstacles might stand in your way? How will you deal with them? Time and energy are my biggest obstacles. Having a full-time job not only takes up a big part of my day, it can also be mentally exhausting. I will deal with this by shortening my sessions on days when I'm really tired. Often, just the thought of having to play for 2 hours makes me not want to play at all. But I can always play for just 1 hour. That way, I can still make progress and not lose my desire to play. I could also lose my edge in the game when adding an additional table. I will deal with this by using my A to C game analysis to evaluate my play after each session and to make sure I'm avoiding big mistakes. Tim just graduated from college and wants to spend a year traveling and playing professionally. He's a profitable player, but tilt can be a big problem that really affects him on and off the table. Results goal. Significantly reduce tilt within 2 months. Eliminate it within 6 months. Process goals. Initially, spend at least 2 hours per week attempting to understand the triggers, signs, and causes of my tilt. Create a logic statement to deal with it while playing. Regularly evaluate my anger and write about it in my journal. Do a mental hand history when needed or review existing ones. Identify the tactical mistakes I typically make while on tilt and create a strategic reminder to make sure that I don't make these mistakes while playing. Create a warm-up routine that prepares me to deal with tilt every time I play. Stay vigilant. Why is reducing tilt so important? Normally, to deal with tilt, I just wouldn't play for a few weeks and everything would work itself out. But now, having to pay for traveling doesn't give me that option to just not play. Plus, tilting and losing a bunch of money can put me in a really bad mood. I want to have an amazing year, and I not only want to enjoy traveling, I don't want to avoid doing things because I'm tilting money away at the poker table. What obstacles might stand in your way? How will you deal with them? A bad run of cards early in the trip could really put a lot of pressure on me, and that would only make my tilt worse. I'm going to deal with this by waiting an extra month to leave so I can save up more money. Tips for setting and achieving goals. Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. Mike Tyson, former heavyweight boxing champion. Your goals don't have to be perfect from the start. If you're still in the process of learning how to set goals, what's required to accomplish goals, and how to evaluate progress, it would make sense to feel overwhelmed. The following tips can make this process more manageable. Define the end. A goal needs a clearly defined endpoint. Otherwise, how will you know when you have reached it? It's easy to determine the endpoints of results goals, such as win X amount of money, but how do you know when you've eliminated tilt or developed a good routine? For process or quality goals such as these, you need to clearly define the endpoint at the same time that you set the goal. For example, you might determine that tilt will be eliminated when you have either 3 months of full-time play and or have played through at least 2 severe downswings without making any big mistakes caused by anger. You'll know that you're developing a good routine in poker when you're consistently playing at a high level and don't have to force yourself to do your routine before every session. Defining the endpoint also lets you know when you can pull back on your efforts a bit and feel satisfied by your hard-earned results. Track progress. When you define a goal in great detail, you make your progress much easier to evaluate. If you have a process-oriented goal such as play with more focus, create a written description of exactly what that means to you. You can then review your focus after each session to see if you made any progress. If you find you have a few common distractions that disrupt your focus, track their frequency in each session. Set 2 targets. Since it's hard to know exactly what you're capable of achieving, set both a low target and a high target. For example, if you're setting an hourly goal for the month, you could have a minimum target of 100 hours and a high target of 140. Make the minimum target something you feel confident you can achieve and the high target something that really pushes you. That way, If you're ahead of pace, you already have another target to aim for. If you're behind, you still have another target within reach, which can dissuade you from giving up completely. Execute. Achieving goals is similar to playing quality poker. You have to make a lot of correct decisions. From start to finish, you're faced with hundreds, if not thousands, of decisions that either lead you towards or away from your end goal. Even though you can't be perfect in your execution, you must work hard to minimize and efficiently learn from your mistakes. If you're finding it too hard to consistently make a lot of good decisions, your goal might be too far out of reach, or your preparation might not be sufficient. Analyze the reasons that you're struggling to execute and make the necessary adjustments. Set a time frame. Setting a reasonable time frame for your goals can create a sense of urgency and priority without adding stress. If your goal is to beat 2-4, but you don't set a deadline, you're essentially allowing yourself forever to accomplish it. A timeline adds necessary structure to your goals and helps you to avoid procrastinating and wasting time. However, you don't want to put excess pressure on yourself or feel overly rushed, especially because of variance. Make a good, reasonable estimate and hold yourself accountable for doing the work required to get there. Just remember, the more challenging and long-term the goal, the harder it is to predict exactly how long it will take. The time period you set when establishing the goal is not set in stone. Make sure to evaluate your progress regularly so you can make adjustments without getting too far off track. Set personal goals. Personal goals, such as buying a house, being more confident, or taking vacations, deepens your connection to poker and allows you to see how it fits into your life. When you can connect with poker on that personal level, it will intensify your focus and motivate you to be successful. Find the right number. If you're struggling to achieve your goals, you might be trying to accomplish too much at once. The mind has a limited mental capacity, and the number of goals you can target at one time is limited as well. So, how many goals is the right number? That answer depends on their size and complexity. The smaller or easier the goal, the more of them you can handle. So, big goals, such as dominating 5-10 in PLO, may need to be taken on one at a time. The ideal number depends on your own individual capacity. Setting a lot of goals isn't necessarily a problem, just as long as you realize that progress is likely to be slower. The good thing is that you can always dial up the number if you're not being pushed enough, or dial back the number if you're being pushed too much. Use constructive language. Avoid using negative language such as "don't tilt" and "stop making obvious mistakes." Knowing what you don't want to do is not the same as knowing what you do want to do. Furthermore, stating what you don't want to do doesn't provide an accurate and clear endpoint. In these examples, you can alter the wording so instead they read, "learn to control tilt and eventually eliminate it," and "learn why I continue to make terrible mistakes." These might seem like they say similar things, but the revised wording is more constructive and identifies a clear and concise objective. Make accurate comparisons. Looking at other players' accomplishments can sometimes be useful in determining your own goals. However, you should avoid doing this unless you have enough knowledge to make an accurate comparison. Too often, players set goals that they think will be easy for them to achieve because a friend or another player was successful in achieving them. What's easy for them isn't always as easy for you, and vice versa. Comparisons are best made when you look beyond the results to understand their specific process and what skills were used to get there. Ask them. People often like talking about their successes. You might be surprised what they're willing to share. If you don't get answers from them, try to avoid making the comparison at all. Finish. When you work so hard at accomplishing a goal, such as winning a major tournament or establishing yourself in a new limit, it's easy to get ahead of yourself as you near the end. Thoughts of what it would mean to win when you're chip leader deep in a tournament can be distracting enough that they cause you to lose. Become comfortable too soon at a new limit, and you'll stop making all the moves that made you profitable up until that point. Sprinters run through the finish line. They don't stop right at it. So don't stop working until you have completely seen your goals through to the end. Chapter 7. Self-discipline. At this point in the book, you've been presented with a wealth of strategies and practices that can enable you to optimize both your mental and tactical poker game. Now, how do you implement them? How do they go from words on a page to skills that are practiced, learned, and impactful? Obviously, there are a number of things that need to happen, but without some level of self-discipline, it would be very hard to actually accomplish any of them. Many players love the autonomy that poker grants them, but that comes at a cost and with greater responsibility. Nobody else can be held accountable for the quality of your game. Nobody else is going to set your goals, deadlines, and schedule. It's all on you. Being self-disciplined is of the utmost importance in poker, as it is what drives you to be consistent and effective in the work you put into your game. It gives you the greatest chance to fully leverage all of the resources out there, including this book, to reach your potential. And as a poker player, you know that if you're not putting in the work, you're actively falling behind. Discipline is something that you're exposed to very early on in life. Your parents, teachers, and other authority figures most likely disciplined you in an effort to teach you right from wrong, form healthy habits, and create structure in your life. When you are young, the necessity for self-discipline is minimal, since the authority figures in your life have the role of imposing the rules and structure that you can't yet handle. You're handed deadlines for homework, curfews, and expectations for your future. And then at some point, you're set free. You become fully responsible for yourself. You need to set goals and create structure you're so used to other people establishing for you. To do all of this effectively, you need self-discipline. Self-discipline for a poker player can sometimes be problematic. Players are often drawn to poker because it's a job where they don't have a boss, and they love the idea of not having to answer to anyone. The type of player who is most attracted to the game for this reason is most likely also a player who doesn't want to have to set and abide by rules or structure or answer to anyone, including themselves. This can account for the problems that plague many poker players. Whether it's breaking a stop loss, not playing enough, or gambling on blackjack, there are numerous ways in which problems with discipline can manifest. It's undoubtedly a skill that nearly all players believe could be stronger. As a player, a good way to measure your self-discipline is by looking at the goals you have achieved. No matter the size or complexity of your goals, if you are able to achieve them, you have a good level of discipline. This is important to establish, not just because it can shed light on your lack of discipline, but it can also prevent you from being excessively disciplined. If you're not able to balance your workload with the freedom and fun that being a poker player affords you, many problems, resentment, burnout, exhaustion, among others, could arise. Players tend to think of self-discipline as something they either have or they don't. It is important to recognize that this is not the case. Instead, a range exists just like it does in any other skill. There are times when players display a high level of self-discipline, and there are times when they severely lack it. The problem is that players hold themselves to this mythically high standard that's only attainable on those occasions when they're highly motivated. On those occasions, they often wonder, why can't I be like this all the time? The answer is the same for why you can't play your A game all the time. When attempting to improve your self-discipline, rather than forcing yourself to fulfill unrealistic expectations, build off of your areas of strength. This way you can make steady progress and not experience major setbacks, disappointment, or extreme highs and lows. When you start to feel that you are lacking discipline, it doesn't mean you have completely lost control. The skills that are trained to the level of unconscious competence can't just disappear. For example, even when you were really low on discipline, you still complete a warm-up before you play, never gamble on sports after you lose, and only add more tables online when you can handle them. It is the skills that are still in the process of being learned that disappear when you are having problems. For this reason, it makes sense to start the process of becoming more disciplined by focusing on your self-discipline C game. In order to do this, you first have to get a very detailed picture of what that C game actually looks like. Start by answering these questions. What are the specific mistakes that you make when your level of self-discipline is at its worst? What's the first sign that your level of self-discipline is becoming a problem? When are you most likely to be lacking self-discipline? Do problems occur more when you're winning or losing? Where do you struggle to maintain self-discipline, at the tables or away from the tables? Do you tend to forget the important things you need to be doing? If so, do you make excuses for why they don't get done? What are the excuses you tell yourself or others? What specifically improves your level of self-discipline? As you've done with other assessments, regularly take notes about ways in which you lack self-discipline until you have a solid picture of your self-discipline C game. Focus especially on taking notes immediately after instances where you're at your worst. Even though it's hard to have the self-discipline to take notes, these are the best times to be gathering data. Try injecting goals or inspiration to spark some motivation. Remember, your goals in poker are on the line, and potentially your ability to continue playing. develop a sense of urgency to create a clear picture of your worst level of self-discipline so you can prevent your game from being derailed. Occasionally, just going through this assessment process is enough for players to make the necessary changes. Most often, though, they need to dig deeper into their issues surrounding self-discipline and put in some additional time and effort. Breaking down the following five concepts strongly connected to self-discipline can facilitate this process. Taking responsibility. Following rules. Willpower. Work ethic. Time management. Taking responsibility. The first step to becoming more self-disciplined is to accept responsibility and acknowledge that your success is entirely on you. You are the only one responsible for your goals, time, and work ethic. If you keep relying on external things or hoping that someone or something else will drive your success, you will never become self-disciplined. Even if you're getting staked, coached, or sponsored, success is still ultimately in your hands. Taking on the responsibility of being your own boss can often be harder than it seems. You're the one making all of the important decisions, and you are the only one to blame if anything goes wrong. You feel less pressure when someone else is running the show, because ultimately responsibility is on them, not you. Knowing you alone control your fate can feel like a heavy, burdensome weight on your shoulders. Sometimes it just becomes too much to bear, and you end up resorting to behavior that can relieve some of this weight. Deflecting blame onto someone or something else is one way to relieve the pressure. For many players, blame has become such a hardwired reaction that sometimes they aren't even aware they're doing it. To begin breaking out of the habit, answer the following questions. What or who do you tend to blame? Why are you having a hard time taking responsibility? In what situations does this tend to happen most? What steps can you take to accept more responsibility? Most often, players will blame variants or other players. They say things like, "I didn't lose because I played badly, it was variants." By saying this, they make themselves feel better by placing the blame on something out of their control. And while it's true, they're not responsible nor have control over how the cards come out or how their opponents play, that doesn't mean they're helpless. Players always have the responsibility of understanding the realities of variance and knowing their opponent's game as well as possible. In poker, there's always some way to accept more responsibility. Work hard to recognize the instances where you're blaming someone or something else, and redirect the responsibility back onto yourself. When you can accept blame and acknowledge your weaknesses, only then can you start to improve. Following rules. Many poker players set rules for themselves in an effort to stay in control of their game. For example, they'll determine a stop loss, what stakes to play, how long to play for, and the caliber of player they're willing to face. Unfortunately, these rules are often broken as quickly as they're set. They end up losing more, jumping up in stakes, playing too long, and playing against tougher competition. Players often wonder why it is that they can set rules for themselves and then so easily break them, sometimes just a few hours later. There are two major reasons. One, they haven't truly experienced the benefits of following the rule or the costs of breaking it. So in the moment when they're faced with the choice to follow the rule or break it, they go with whatever seems best at the time, rather than what's in their best long-term interests. Let's say you have set a stop loss of 2 buy-ins, but you're playing in a juicy game and get cooled twice within the first hour. Do you quit as your rule says, or do you keep playing? The answer isn't so easy. On one hand, you're giving up a ton of value by quitting, but if you're susceptible to tilting and losing control, quitting could be a strong option even if you're not yet on tilt. Your stop loss rule needs refining in order for you to maximize value and protect your game from tilt. For each rule that you consistently break, write out a list of benefits for following it and a list of consequences for not following. For example, if you're continually opting out of doing your warm-up and jumping right into playing, your list of benefits and consequences might look like this. Benefits of a warm-up. I play better and make fewer mistakes. Variance is less likely to bother me. It makes me feel confident and ready to play. Consequences of not doing a warm-up. I'm more likely to tilt. There are more spots where I get lost. I get bored more easily, especially when card dead. When you find yourself itching to play, take a few slow, deep breaths and inject this list of benefits and consequences into your mind. Use them as the rationale for why it's so important that you do the warm-up. Over time, you'll reinforce these reasons more and more until you start following your rules without even having to remind yourself why it's so important you do. 2. You may be rebelling against your own rules, just as you did with your parents, teachers, or coaches' rules when you were younger. If you were an expert at defying authority as a kid, you could actually be doing the same thing to yourself that you did to those authority figures years ago. You've learned how to be really good at it, and there may be underlying reasons, yet to be resolved, for why you defy authority. Consider how your own personal history may be repeating itself, and use the mental hand history to help you break down and resolve the cause of your defiance. This issue is one that originated well before you started playing poker, and likely has emerged as a problem in other areas of your life. It isn't going away instantly. Write a list of the excuses you make to rationalize breaking your rules. Then, inject logic, goals, and inspiration to undermine those excuses and reinforce the importance of sticking to your rules. Willpower. The energy you use to be self-disciplined is your willpower. Many people think of self-discipline as an unchanging character trait that consistently remains the same throughout their lives. However, there's a large body of research that shows how willpower is a finite resource and how a loss of it in one area of life affects how much of it is left in another area. One study found that students were more likely to smoke, stop taking care of their personal hygiene, and become prone to emotional outbursts while cramming for finals. The stress of studying for finals lowered their overall willpower and led to lapses of self-discipline in other areas of life. Essentially, the loss of willpower exposed their self-discipline C game, just as tilt or fatigue can expose your tactical C game. This research helps to explain the types of difficulties poker players experience regularly. When grinding a lot of poker, both live and online, players often eat poorly, exercise less, are too tired to go out with friends, or drink and party heavily. At the end of a long session, players often become undisciplined tactically and start spewing chips. They may even be unable to resist playing craps or keno before walking out of the casino. By pushing yourself to be more self-disciplined at times when it doesn't come easily, you can increase your willpower. This is similar to runners being able to increase their physical endurance by pushing themselves to run farther than what feels easy to them. Here are two other ways to increase willpower. 1. Develop good habits. Only use your willpower when you need it most. Too often players lack good habits and they waste willpower in basic areas of their life, such as starting their day, going to the gym, and eating. Habits, or routines, allow you to flow from these basic daily activities without having to deplete valuable energy. Your habits can preserve willpower, even more when you can develop what author Charles Duhigg calls keystone habits in his book, The Power of Habit. Keystone habits are habits that create a domino effect and lead to a much wider pattern of good habits. For example, making a healthy breakfast in the morning might lead to studying before you play, being on time to play, and starting in a good frame of mind. Conversely, if you skip breakfast entirely, you might just jump right into playing and be at risk of tilt or playing poorly. 2. Kill a wish. Players often wish they had more self-discipline. They see other players with this skill and wish they could have more too. Perhaps they see self-discipline as a character trait they just weren't born with, or they just don't want to put in the work to develop it. Either way, the wish is a passive approach to gaining a skill they'd ultimately like to have. Even worse, the wish deactivates willpower, because why would you work hard to achieve something if you believe you can just have it simply by wishing for it? When you kill the wish to have more self-discipline, you give yourself the opportunity to increase your willpower and use it productively. Work ethic. Work ethic is the value you place on studying, learning, and developing your game away from the tables. In poker, a relaxed attitude towards work tends to be glorified through images of college students instantly winning millions of dollars. The fantasy of making tons of money with very little work has attracted many players to the game. For many of them, poker is enjoyable and doesn't feel like work. However, problems arise when players abuse the freedom that poker affords them. While having a more professional work ethic may not seem fun at first, it's definitely more fun than failing, going back to a real job, and proving your doubters right. Success is a lot of fun and makes the mundane tasks that are necessary to achieve it more enjoyable as well. This doesn't mean that a Saturday night spent at the casino or putting in the extra hours of study is more desirable than going out with friends or spending time with family, but those decisions take on greater meaning when they give you a greater chance of reaching your goals. If you're lacking sufficient work ethic, start by answering the following questions. Who are the people you respect most in poker? How would you describe their work ethic? Who do you respect more, people who are smart or people who work hard? What are your current thoughts about the value of work? Have they changed over the years? And if so, how? What negative associations do you have towards work? Where did they develop? Who was your biggest influence, even if negative, in understanding the value of work? What did this person teach you? As was mentioned at the beginning of the chapter, you only need enough self-discipline and work ethic to reach your goals. With the game becoming more competitive and the after effects of Black Friday weighing down on the whole poker economy, many of you need to step up this area of your game. Solidifying your beliefs about the value of work through the above questions can help to provide that needed boost. In addition, use the mental hand history to break down and resolve any negative associations you have towards work. This will further free you from any conflicts that are undermining your attempts to improve. Time management. In order to be more self-disciplined, you have to be able to effectively manage your time. Making time for what's most important is easier when you set a plan. As a poker player, you have to decide when to play, study, and take time off. Those of you who get things done randomly are afforded the freedom to do what you want. But ask yourself this, are you actually able to get done all that you want to do? Having good time management skills can dramatically increase your efficiency. Not only does that affect your ability to accomplish your goals, but it also allows you to have more free time. For many players, however, managing their time is an ongoing challenge. They struggle to balance poker and everything else in their lives, a job, friends, family, a significant other, and domestic responsibilities. Often this problem stems from a lack of clear priorities in poker and outside of it. An adaptive schedule is a solution that offers a balance of structure and flexibility. In an adaptive schedule, you specify certain amounts of play, work off the table, rest, and other things that are important to your game as well as your life. Rather than having to set exact times during the day for playing, you have the flexibility to choose the times based on how you feel, the quality of the games, or the availability of your friends. You are holding yourself accountable for putting in the necessary hours, while also giving yourself the freedom to schedule those hours in ways that are most convenient for you. In the process of developing your adaptive schedule, you may figure out that there are certain times of the day when you play or study most effectively. In those cases, flexibility should take a backseat to productivity, and you should make sure to get those activities in at the specific times that you do them best. One of the biggest challenges poker players face in building an adaptive schedule is finding a way to avoid wasting time. The lack of a normal work schedule often results in hours spent watching TV, surfing the web, and anything else that doesn't involve playing or studying. In reality, the way you decide to spend your time is always based on your goals, which is why identifying conflicting goals is so important. You first need to identify the hidden motives behind whatever it is that you're doing when you feel like you're wasting time. What value does it have, or what purpose does it serve? Avoiding responsibility, procrastination, and instant gratification are a few of the more common motives. The next thing you can do is actually total it up. Every time you realize that you're wasting time, estimate when it started, and keep a running tally for a week or two. Also, note what you could have been doing instead at those times. Then, define the easiest ways to increase productive time or decrease wasted time. For example, you could decide to watch 20 fewer minutes of TV, get out of bed 15 minutes earlier, and check email only when you're done playing. The key is to look for the low-hanging fruit, easy, manageable changes that don't require much effort. By starting with these small changes, you get the ball rolling and can build towards bigger improvements later. Many players fail to decrease the amount of time they waste because they try to do too much at once. After their inspiration fades, they're back to square one. Client story. Darren Kramer, high-stakes Omaha player. I previously did not have a very professional attitude towards poker. Things like warming up and cooling down didn't factor into my game at all. I would see good spots in poker and just play non-stop. If a good cash game got going, I would either play until I was blue in the face, or there was absolutely no money left on the table that was value. I was hardwired to see a bad player and play non-stop until I had all their money. This was really burning me out. I would play 32-hour sessions where I wouldn't leave my seat, even though I was so tired I couldn't think straight. I also didn't realize how much this was costing me over the long term. When I started to look at the bigger picture, I realized that it's not about making $30,000 in one night. Poker is a long-term game, and I needed to figure out how to maximize my profit for the entire year, not just one night. I mapped out an overall schedule for the year, so I could be at my mental peak at the most important times. To help me understand the concept, Jared made a comparison to the professional tennis players who plan their entire year around the Grand Slams. There's probably a tennis tournament somewhere in the world every week, but Roger Federer can't play the equivalent of Wimbledon 6 weeks in a row. It is too demanding. The same thing applies to poker. If I play too much, I become the fish. In tennis, the top players choose their events carefully, so they peak for the major tournaments, and I decided the WSOP and the Aussie Millions were my majors. This decision gave me a chance to work hard on certain areas of my mental and tactical game in preparation. I also managed my energy really well before and during each event, so I could stay fresh and sharp the whole time. In Vegas, instead of playing just when games were good, I kept to a routine for 5 weeks straight and didn't have a losing session of 5,100 in that time. I was religiously disciplined, knew what my goals were, and had my tournament schedule planned out in advance. I gave myself the flexibility to veer off that schedule if the cash games were amazing, and I also took unexpected breaks when it was clear that my mind was getting a little burned out. Rather than robotically keep churning along and hitting a brick wall so hard that I couldn't go anymore, which I had done at every previous WSOP, I would take a day off. That was enough to get me refreshed and back playing at a high level. Not only did I create a cycle to get my mind to peak at certain times throughout the year, I also built in mini cycles during tournaments so I could stay sharp through several long days of grinding. These small warm-ups and cool-downs also helped me to spot mistakes before I was about to make them, which helped to keep me focused and on top of my game. When you play so many hours for so long, you always have a lot weighing on your mind. You always have hands to discuss. It was important to me to get those things off my chest during short breaks, so I was fresh by the time I started again. My experience with this yearly schedule has really made me realize how much more professional poker is becoming. Anyone can go on 2+2 or watch training videos, but the big thing I've noticed is that I can make a lot of money when other regs go on tilt. That's challenging me to see just how much longer I can play at my peak compared to them. If I prepare well and can play optimally, I think I'll win more money over the course of a year than a reg who is 15% better than me tactically, but doesn't take care of their mental game. This is a hidden thing that isn't talked about enough. One or two bad days where you're tired or tilted can hurt your win rate so much that it takes months to get back on track. It is so important when you are playing a lot of hours in games with small edges to be on top of your game. Chapter 8. Grinding. While some poker players have a more natural talent for grinding, with the right approach, anyone can learn to play more hands, longer hours, and across more online tables. One key to increasing your capacity for grinding is to understand that endurance and strength develop in a similar way in the mind as they do in the body. Many players treat the mind differently and don't think playing that extra hour or adding a couple tables should be an issue. Their goal can't just be to play longer or more tables, however. They also have to maintain a high level of play. You don't need skill to be able to play long hours or a ton of hands and be a losing player. Sure, some drop-off in the quality of your play is expected as you increase volume, especially at first, but it's critical that you minimize that drop-off as much as possible. Contrary to what some critics might say, highly skilled multi-tablers are not playing a mindless form of poker. Undoubtedly, focusing on only one table allows you to think more deeply about each decision than when you're playing 10. On the other hand, skilled multi-tablers have automated a large amount of poker knowledge and an incredibly complex decision-making process. They're making tons of complex in-game decisions instinctually and with very little thinking. With so much of their knowledge trained to the level of unconscious competence, or chunked, they have a lot of space within working memory to think deeply about important decisions. It's not mindless, it's instinctual. This chapter fits perfectly at the end of this book because every chapter up to this point increases your ability to grind in some way. Within each section of this chapter are references to sections of previous chapters so that you can refer back to them if you need a reminder. Automation. In order to become a successful grinder, a large part of your poker skill must be automated or mastered to the level of unconscious competence. Automation is especially important for multi-tabling online because there's a limit to how much a player can think about at any one time. By automating a large amount of their skills, they can autopilot many decisions without wasting valuable mental space or resources. For example, good grinders are able to instantly analyze prior action, bet sizing, hand range, and other details of the hand without thinking. Decisions that require thinking burn a lot more energy than decisions made automatically. The following are the most important sections of this book that will help you to accomplish this. Improve your C game. Each time you correct mistakes in the back end of your range, you're essentially training the corrections to the level of unconscious competence. See page 80. Transfer of skill. When training skills to the level of unconscious competence, steadily increase the difficulty of the situation in which you're performing, or adjust your expectations of automation when the games are harder than you prepared for. See page 64. Training decision-making. You are automating not just your tactical skill, but your decision-making process as well. See page 109 for information on how to do this efficiently. Increasing mental endurance. Many players expect it to be easy to increase their mental endurance. They see other players who can play 12 tables for 6 hours at a time without a problem and think they should be able to as well. What they don't realize is that if they currently can only play 6 tables for 3 hours, they're expecting a 200% increase in their capacity to happen automatically. This is no different from trying to run 15 miles when they are normally able to run only 5. They may be successful in running 200% more on one occasion, but can they do it repeatedly? With each consecutive day, their bodies get a little weaker, and without proper rest, the risk of serious injury increases dramatically. Grinding a lot of poker is similar to running long distances day after day. You need to increase your mental endurance in order to consistently grind that extra distance. Steadily add tables and time while maintaining quality decision-making, just as you would increase weight and duration while maintaining proper form in a physical workout. Here are a few ideas for how to effectively increase mental endurance. Make a realistic assessment. This step is extremely important. Spend some time looking through your poker database or thinking about the amount of volume you've put in over the past 6 to 12 months. Specifically, determine how many tables you play on average and how long you can play that number of tables while maintaining at least your B game. If you have been dealing with tilt or other mental game problems, you must account for them in your calculation. When you increase volume, you're increasing the frequency of triggers that can induce mental game problems. This makes you susceptible to having these problems accumulate, carry over to future sessions, and become even more problematic. Underestimating the impact of increased mental game triggers is a major reason that players fail to consistently grind more poker. Increase steadily. Trying to immediately increase your mental endurance by 100% is clearly a mistake. So what is a percentage that makes sense? It's hard to say exactly, but a reasonable increase is much closer to 10% than 100%. Working from the average number of tables and hours you're capable of playing, make a plan to gradually increase that number. If you can play 4 tables, adding a 5th is a 25% increase. That large increase may mean you need to decrease the amount of time that you play, or play lower stakes, until playing the 5th table becomes as comfortable as playing 4. Going this slowly may seem ridiculous, but if you push too hard, you can burn out, and inevitably slow down or jeopardize the overall process. Sample workouts. Create a schedule that plans out your attempt to increase your mental endurance. Here are a couple of sample workouts. These numbers are based on a player who is currently averaging 2-hour sessions on 6 tables. Light workout. Day 1. Increase by 15 minutes. Day 2. Increase by 1 table. Day 3. Increase by 15 minutes. Day 4. Increase by 1 table. Day 5. Increase by 15 minutes and 1 table. Day 6. Increase by 30 minutes or 2 tables. Day 7. Day off. Heavy workout. Day 1. Increase by 30 minutes. Day 2. Increase by 2 tables and decrease by 15 minutes. Day 3. Increase by 45 minutes or 2 tables. Day 4. Day off, or a small session that's 50% less than average. Day 5. Increase by 15 minutes and 1 table. Day 6. Increase by 30 minutes and 1 table, or 15 minutes and 2 tables. Day 7, day off. Push yourself. The hardest part of increasing the distance of a run is the part beyond what currently feels easy to you. Playing an extra table for a longer period of time puts added strain on your mind. You have to fight for every inch of progress. If you only do what comes easily, you won't be increasing your endurance. You need to continually push yourself past the point where you are comfortable and then follow it up with rest so your mind can recover well enough to push again. Track your progress. After each session, keep track of how long you played, the intensity of the session overall, and the volume you were able to add while pushing yourself. Note any improvements. Was it easier to push longer? Did you play better than normal? Etc. Also keep track of any factors that influence the relative difficulty of a session, such as sleep, the severity of good and bad variants, or exercise. That way, you can get a more accurate reading of your progress. Rest and recovery. Rest is essential to the recovery of your mind and body. As you've already learned, you don't have an infinite supply of energy. Just like you have to fill up the gas tank in your car, your mind and body need to refuel. Knowing how much to rest, when to do it, and how best to do it takes some experimenting. There's no one-size-fits-all method. Here are a few ways you can get proper rest. Cool down. Athletes ice and stretch their muscles after playing to help their bodies recover more quickly. Poker players who grind a lot of poker need to help their minds recover after long sessions by taking notes after they finish playing. Writing out their experiences at the table frees their mind from having to grind on poker long after they're done playing. See page 34. Step away from the computer. Spending time away from the computer and away from poker is essential to helping your mind rest. Hang out with friends, but don't talk about poker. Go to the gym, watch a movie, or do anything else you find enjoyable. Poker players generally know they should be getting away from their computers, but they often have trouble breaking out of this habit. This takes self-discipline. Review chapter 7 for more on how to create better habits. Take time off. Don't expect to be able to play poker every day. Sure, you can go stretches of time, maybe a month, playing every day, but at some point, your mind will start to break down. Take, on average, 1 day off per week, 5 days off per month, and 5 days in a row off per quarter. Sleep. Good sleep is of paramount importance. You might be able to get away with a few days of less than optimal sleep, but eventually, it'll catch up with you. Lacking sleep is like a car running on empty. With too little energy in the tank, how can you expect to consistently grind a lot of hands and play them well? The amount of sleep each person needs to be at their best varies. Find the amount that works best for you by relating the amount of quality sleep you get each night to your endurance levels the following day. Keep in mind that for some people, sleeping too much can be as problematic as sleeping too little. Take a vacation. Poker players often don't like taking vacations because of how rusty their game tends to be when they return. Enjoying some extended time off from poker is important, so go to page 98 for how to address this problem. Schedule days off. Rather than only resting when you get burned out, plan days off ahead of time. This gives you something to look forward to while you're grinding. See page 160. Extreme grinding. This section is devoted to helping you achieve some of the more extreme grinding goals, such as Supernova Elite, a rake race, or prop bet. In general, poker players are overconfident about their ability to be successful because they can't envision anything going wrong. Inspired by visions of victory, they dive headfirst, only to peek their heads back out when trouble strikes. Not everyone who does this fails, but for those who have failed and want a different outcome, here are some additional things to think about. Planning. Review the section starting on page 139 and spend some time thinking about your starting point, reasons for attempting your goal, and any potential obstacles. Make sure you plan periods of rest. Too often, players think about the average number of hands they need to play over an artificially low measure. For example, when going for Supernova Elite, players are often planning to make around 2,800 VPPs per day for the entire year. This is ridiculous. Attempting to play every day, even if just for a short amount of time, is a recipe for failure. Instead, if you plan to take a more reasonable 80 days off throughout the year, the average VPPs needed per playing day changes to around 3,500. Minimizing distractions. As you read about in Chapter 5 on focus, distractions can drain your energy. Make sure the people in your life understand what you're undertaking so you can be as free as possible from potential distractions. You can then be more proactive about planning to spend time with them when you know you'll be resting. That way, your rest time will be more productive, and you won't have to rely on making plans when you're exhausted. Setting short-term goals. After the initial inspiration wears off, the challenge of playing a ton of poker may eventually feel like an incredible grind. At that time, it's important to set short-term goals that keep you focused on targets that feel manageable. When you're tired, the last thing you want to do is focus on how much you have left to get done. Instead, focus on getting through the next hour or playing the next 100 hands. Define these short-term goals ahead of time so you can use them as soon as they become necessary. Warm up and cool down. The importance of a warm up and cool down cannot be overstated. See page 31. Minimizing active learning. Keep the amount of active learning away from the table to a minimum because you need to focus most of your energy on playing. Your main focus should be on proving the areas that you already know well. This will make it easier for you to make high-quality decisions without having to fill your mind with new concepts. New concepts can be distracting, require more energy to think about, and may cause you to forget about other, more important parts of your game. When learning away from the table, find the method that makes it easiest for you to learn. For example, if you find it helpful to talk about hands, then in your cooldown, identify a few key hands to review with a coach or friend. Whatever method you choose, make sure to have a solid A to C game analysis done before you begin your extreme grind. Then, focus all your efforts mainly on improving your C game. If you can do this, when your grind is complete, you'll have solidified a higher low point for your game. You'll also have created space to elevate your A game, should you choose to focus more on learning than grinding. Conclusion. Do the work. Take what you've learned from this book and turn it into something that can truly benefit your game. The only way to play in the zone more consistently, learn more effectively, make better decisions, set properly aligned goals, and increase focus, discipline, and mental endurance is to put in the work. If you can't think of where to start, do the following. Start working on your A to C game analysis. Go to page 40. Build your game from the ground up and begin correcting your biggest mental and tactical C game mistakes. Go to page 80. Set one results-oriented goal for this week and determine 3 process-oriented goals that will help you achieve it. Go to pages 134 and 139. If you have any hesitation or thoughts of delaying, think of the simplest task that will get the ball rolling. You're not going to achieve your goals from the sidelines, and there's no time like right now to get started. Here are a few good quotes about the value of work if you need some inspiration. Opportunity is missed by most people because it's dressed in overalls and looks like work. Thomas Edison, inventor of the light bulb. If people knew how hard I worked to achieve my mastery, it wouldn't seem so wonderful after all. Michelangelo. There's no traffic on the extra mile. Zig Ziglar, motivational speaker. Remember, go to www.jaredtendlerpoker.com/worksheets to download the packet of Word documents and Excel files to help you gather notes, break down areas of your game, and track your progress. Return to the book often and reference sections that are most important to your game. You can't absorb everything in here after reading it once. If you ever have questions, come find me on Twitter, @JaredTendler, or at facebook.com/JaredTendlerPoker. I'm happy to answer them. Recommended reading. Blink, The Power of Thinking Without Thinking, by Malcolm Gladwell. Bounce, The Myth of Talent and the Power of Practice, by Matthew Saeed. Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us, by Daniel Pink. Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience, by Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. Mindset, The New Psychology of Success, by Carol Dweck. Outliers, The Story of Success, by Malcolm Gladwell. Talent is Overrated, What Really Separates World-Class Performers from Everybody Else, by Jeff Coven. The Art of Learning, An Inner Journey to Optimal Performance, by Josh Waitzkin. The Feeling of What Happens, Body and Emotion in the Making of Consciousness, by Antonio Damasio. The Power of Habit, Why We Do What We Do and How to Change, by Charles Duhigg. The Talent Code, Greatness Isn't Born,